I don't know if this will be of any help, but you remember, Doctor, a few years ago, an expedition on Earth to herd of mastodons in the Siberian tundra. Dead thousands of years, yet their fur was still intact. The meat still edible.
That's quite right, my dear Lee. But they weren't alive. And that's the important difference. They weren't alive.
Nobody makes a bad movie on purpose, so imagine if these guys tried. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. Use the codes FROG1, FROG2, and FROG3 to save money on renewals, hosting, domains, and much more at GoDaddy.com. Thanks, GoDaddy. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack episode 19. And this is the show where we take weird movies from Netflix. Not always weird. Sometimes just bad. Sometimes old. Sometimes good. And we play them. We watch them. We dissect them. And we tear them apart like ravenous animals right here on Film Sack. I'm Scott Johnson, joined by Mr. Brian Ibbett.
Okay, so today is X day minus 3, and it's H hour minus 59 minutes. And if a plane leaves Newark traveling at 1,400 miles per hour...
I was hoping one of you would bring that up. There's some screwball math happening in this movie.
That was brilliant.
Weird. Also joining us, Mr. Let's go, Brian Dunaway.
Yes. I know that this six-story prehistoric monster that was terrorized in the city a few minutes ago. Yeah, we can't find him.
He's hiding.
He's
can't hiding
find
in
him.
The dark in New York. And lastly, Mr. Randy Jordan, a.k.a. Randy Deluxe. Hello.
Have you ever noticed that every time you ever see a picture of me, it's only the front half of me coming around a building, or maybe the front half of me coming out of a hole in a wall that I just made? Have you ever noticed that? I'm the scariest puppet show you've ever seen.
Now, this is actually one of those movies I don't think people are going to be able to hear all of that and know right away what we got planned for. Nah. Because it's an older one, it's a classic, and I think actually kind of holds up a little bit. There's some things I don't like about it, but it's definitely worth talking about. I'm happy when Film Sack digs deep back into the decade that was the 50s, because I think some crazy cool crap happened in movies during that time. And it really sort of established a lot of genres and a lot of things that we still enjoy today. Let's let Scott Fletcher explain.
The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. This 1953 sci-fi classic, directed by Eugene Laurie and starring Paul Christian, Ross Elliott, and Cecil Calloway, brings to the screen Ray Bradbury's short story, The Foghorn. The powerful force of atomic testing in the Arctic has awakened a sleeping rhetosaurus that's been frozen in solid ice, and the creature rises from the sea to exact revenge in the streets of New York. Features animation by Ray Harryhausen.
It's so good that Scott Fletcher gets to use our show to develop his demo reel.
I know, and to really explore his range, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
The Harryhausen connection was new to me. I didn't know that he had anything to do with this, but I think it's actually some of his best work.
Yeah, first work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is it the first thing he ever did?
Independent work.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, because he was making weird little crap at home all the time. But
yeah, well, he was working with a mentor, and this is the first time that he did anything that was totally his.
I don't understand. You know, I've tried to work with a Minotaur before, and I just don't understand what they scream a lot and they stamp around and they eat everything in the kitchen. I don't know.
He meant mentor.
Oh.
Yeah, mentor. A package of Mentos is what he said.
Oh, at my expense. I get it.
Oh. Oh, I thought. Okay.
I'll play the Tom Smothers to your dick.
Now, to your dick. The Eugene Lone or Eugene Laurie, was the director, and he was mainly noted later. Later in his life, I can't talk.
Have some more peanut butter, Scott.
He was known mainly later in his career as the director of a lot of the Kung Fu TV series and one of its sort of chief creators. But he did five episodes between 72 and 73. The last major film that had any sort of impact was Bronco Billy in 1980, which I remember not at all.
Really?
I remember Bronco Billy. It was Clint Eastwood, wasn't it?
Was it? Let's find out. Bronco Billy, 1980. Clint Eastwood. Oh, Clint Eastwood directed it. So, oh no, I'm sorry. That guy was an actor in it.
That guy.
Along with Jeffrey Lewis again. From last week.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm looking at direction and art direction. Okay. Film wise, he didn't direct very much. He went on to, I'm sorry, I told you totally wrong. He went on to do movies like Foreign Intrigue, Telephone Time, whatever that is, The Colossus of New York, Behemoth the Sea Monster.
I need to make a person-to-person call, please.
There's your premise. Go with it. It'll make millions. And something called Gorgo in 61. So everything after that was art direction. So my bad. The work he did on Kung Fu was actually art direction, which is weird for a director to go on to have a very prolific, 49 films in art direction and only a handful of directed movies, 8 in total.
I think this movie is unique in the fact that it was the first monster movie. It spawned all of the Godzilla-type monster movies. Interestingly enough, though, this to me was less of a monster movie and more of a disaster-type movie. I mean, it was teetering on the edge of being a full-blown monster or almost a end-of-world kind of movie.
You see those one dudes that made like all those like 2012 sitting around as kids watching this and totally getting inspired by it?
Totally.
Because if anything, this reminded me a bit when it got to the city stuff. It reminded me of the updated Godzilla movie that those guys did, which I didn't love. What's their names? Emmerich. The two brothers. Noah Emmerich? Noah.
Roland.
No, Roland and Noah, right?
Yes.
It's like we don't even know.
We don't know. Okay, a bunch of actors no one's ever heard of, but I thought this was interesting. The year is 1953. Our main character is a German actor who did nothing but German films but this movie. So every other movie he did is like, Achtung mein Leben, or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
And it's funny, when at the beginning of the movie, I didn't notice any type of accent, but as the movie went along, it seemed like it got thicker. I don't know if they had more lines or what.
You didn't notice? Oh my gosh. My favorite thing about this film is the lead guy sounds like he's doing like a 50 years before its time impersonation of Christopher Walken. It's so awesome.
Christopher Walken with a German, slight German accent.
Well, he's Swiss, but I mean, really, Swiss and German to us doesn't sound any different.
Now, let me look at those dinosaurs he got over there.
Oh my gosh, dude. You have been holding out on us.
Great.
I didn't know you could do that. Crap. Do another one. Give us another line.
I think it looked a little bit like an Allosaurus.
It's awesome. The reason you want to watch The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms is for this. I mean, Christopher Walken was like a small child when this movie was made. He sounds like he doesn't sound like Christopher Walken. He sounds like a bad impersonation. And it's just hysterical.
Yeah, it's like a German guy doing an impersonation of that. And if I'd have known Nimbit could do that before, this would have become a very different show. I had no idea. So Ray Bradbury, short story. Don't really care about that much, other than it's interesting that it was a tiny little story that was printed originally in the New York Post.
Yeah. And Bradbury went back and he sold the rights to the name.
Yeah.
I mean, he had to actually change his short story name to something else.
Now, there are two very important people to point out here that no one will care about in real life, but it matters to us as film sackers.
Mm.
And that is Lee Van Cleef playing the part of Corporal Stone. We remember him from
A cool name.
Take a Hard Ride. Mm-hmm. He was the bad guy with the that guy.
Get that mouth harp out of your mouth.
Michael Fox plays Marty McFly. Just kidding.
I was about to say.
But there's a guy named Michael Fox who was actually my favorite character of the entire film, which was the ER doctor, who was just constantly walking around poking people going, ah, this is big trouble. And he just didn't seem to have the credentials to me to be an actual doctor. But
that.
Donald Woods played Captain Phil Jackson.
Yes, Phil Jackson.
Yeah, forget about that.
Basketball coach. Okay.
Nobody else that's alive or that we care about.
Yeah, this is an old movie.
Oh, except, James Best. I forgot. One of the first people to talk in the movie is James Best, who went on to play Roscoe Pico Train.
That's right, baby.
Yeah. Oh. I can't remember which guy. He was one of the first two guys to say stuff.
Yeah.
Like right after the 40-hour H minus whatever crap, it was the first people to say things.
Yeah, we got to throw back to the way Brian Ibbett introduced himself to this episode, because the film starts like it's one of it's a classic faux documentary.
Totally.
And they never really go back to that for whatever reason.
No, that narrator is nowhere to be found after that introduction.
Do you guys want to hear him? I have a little clip of him.
Let's do it.
All right, here's the narrator saying things about stuff.
This is Operation Experiment. A secret base far north of the Arctic Circle. Experiment was the code name for this top priority scientific expedition. These men arrived here on X Day minus 60. It has taken them the full 2 months to get ready. Today is X Day. It is now H hour minus 59 minutes. There is less than an hour left.
Yeah, I never really could get the hell my head around that. Like what all that time meant? That was really weird.
He had me at Project Experiment.
Gee, so when they had X Day,
X Day, H Day,
Operation Experiment. Yeah, that's a great name too.
Yeah, Experiment.
Came right after Operation Theory.
Right. Yeah, you just interchange all of that. Terrible name.
Yeah. So why do they have an X Day but an H Hour? Why don't they call it X Day and then X Hour?
People it was H Day or X Day minus H Hour.
Because H stands for hour. God.
But wasn't it trying
X
to be like
stand for day?
Wasn't it like D-Day kind of stuff?
It's a variable. They don't know what day it's going to be on.
Why couldn't they say they arrived here in May? It is now the end of July, and I would have gone, "Oh yeah, I get it. 2 months, I got it."
Yeah, that did blow my mind. I was like, "Oh no, I didn't know it was gonna be math. I can't watch this."
And he says, "It's H hour minus 59 minutes, and there's only less than an hour left." Well, obviously, there's less than an hour. Why don't you say that part?
Yeah, say that. Say that, Mr. Announcer. So the film, which was inspired by the successful 1952 re-release of King Kong, was the first film to feature a giant creature awakened or mutated by a nuclear bomb.
And it's very obvious that they were influenced, maybe kind of try to ride the coattails of King Kong with this. A lot of things in common with the original King Kong.
I kept expecting the girl to do more than just stand there, for example. Yeah. I thought the lizard might hold her up or
true.
Something.
Well, Ray Harryhausen's Minotaur was the guy who actually did King Kong.
Oh, he was. I didn't know that.
Yes, I did call it Minotaur that time.
Wow, Harryhausen just buried that guy. Seriously, I mean, that King Kong stuff looks like garbage compared to what Harryhausen pulled off.
Totally.
Even with just this, I thought the effects in this, they used a lot of really sort of weird lighting effects that I thought were great.
Mm-hmm. Very effective movie.
Like when he's biting, overall, when the lizard's biting at like the electrical lines or whatever and kept sticking his head in there. That's great. If I was a kid, I would have been peeing my pants.
And the silhouette with the lighthouse, I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of death and mayhem. Cop out there, all cocky, shooting at it, and then getting his head bit off.
That was so funny. That was the only unrealistic part of that is, you know, you could really tell he had to put the monster on one side and the projectors in the back. So he addressed that later on. But it was fun.
It is really fun, though, to try to see how they did all the different process shots. Because they didn't use the same trick more than a couple of times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like that shot is a guy, they've got a cop standing on the street. He's just wheeled off a bunch of shots at the monster. And then the monster is going to come eat him. So what they did was they shot the cop in the street. They did an actual exterior. And they just lifted him up by a rope. Yeah. And then they bring the puppet monster out in front of a projection of the film.
Yep.
And they have it lean down, covering the rope over so you can't see the rope.
Yeah.
And then he looks like he's being picked up in the monster's jaws, which, of course, you know, nowadays there would be blood everywhere. But it was fun thinking about that and then realizing you're going to do something completely different. You know, later on, the monster's tearing apart Coney Island. They built a huge monster puppet and they built a big miniature and just went to town. You know, they just, you know, it's a totally different process.
It's probably my favorite thing about these movies and Clash of the Titans and others that we've seen in the Film Sack series so far, and that is that it's so much fun to think about what it was to innovate in those effects, to come up with. It's like inventing magic tricks in a way. You're doing things that you're not thinking of exactly. And at the time, the audience totally buys it because they've never seen anything close to that realistic. Right. It looks cheesy now, but I think those were the salad days, man. That was like, that must have been the most fun ever to say, okay, well, we can have the puppet in front and it'll cover the line and we're going to time this just right. And when it's done, they're probably patting each other on the back, and it was probably the greatest day of their life.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to figure out what the bare minimum they need to show for the special effect is that's going to convey the story. So, you know, all right, the beast needs to pass by the diving bell and eat the shark and the octopus that are fighting. That was the worst special effect.
The funny thing about that as a special effect was it had just followed the worst line in the film, which was the scientist saying vaguely scientific things. Like they had some sort of expectations before we saw it. We thought it would have, you know, a bilateral dorsal. And it's a single dorsal. Like, what? Before you saw, you had expectations? I'm confused. You know?
We've been getting it all wrong all these years, imagining it's the beast that was going to come down from the North Pole.
It's got a cantilevric jaw. Okay, wait a minute. I had to hit pause and think about that. A cantilevric jaw. What in the? They were just making crap up.
Yeah, totally.
And so then to follow those lines with this horrible thing, what they did was they went to a fish tank and they filmed an octopus and a miniature shark fighting. Yeah. Yeah. And then they once again they brought the puppet out in front of the tank.
Nope.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Yeah, that was really great.
That was the low point of the movie. Otherwise, really brilliant.
Okay, now I captured a sound effect of who I think is actually Roscoe Pico Train falling into a pit. I'm pretty sure that was Charlie.
The 3 feet deep crevasse.
Yeah, it looked like it was going to be this horrible like fall, and it was like burp.
Was hilarious.
The guy just laid there. So there's no dialogue here, but I kind of captured the sound of him falling, and I think it's worth listening to. So try this out. It may not work, but. Well, you couldn't hear it. You just kind of backed and went poof. But
take our word for it. You have to see it at least for that, because that's what I thought too. I'm like, oh no, he's going to fall off the cliff. And it's like he falls down like 2 feet and then he rolls over. And I'm like, that had to be – these guys are the biggest wussies in the world, because later on the main actor who's the star of the show comes up and he's looking down in this crevasse. First of all, he didn't have to – strap anything on. He could just walked around to the other side of the, because it was like wide open. I'd walk down these little steps here and get to you.
Yeah.
But instead he did the whole rope thing and he didn't get to go down. But then they like threw snow on him and he suddenly collapses after he sees the monster with the snow, and I'm thinking he's hurt.
Yeah. I think Roscoe really pulled at our heartstrings there, but I think it was a terrible choice. Like, it's one of those things in movies where you wonder later, why didn't anyone say anything about the shot?
Yeah.
Why didn't anybody say, you know what,
that's kind of unreal. Wow.
I mean, on the whole, look, this was an earnest film that was attempting to be serious.
Earnest?
Yeah. I don't mean it was an earnest film. I wish it was an earnest film.
Earnest? Sorry.
Hey, watch out. I can't even do an earnest voice anymore. Jim Varney's been too dead. How do you do it? How's it going? How's it going, eh? Nah, never mind.
If I know what I mean.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry. Yeah. I was channeling like Rick Moranis instead.
The great late
who is Jim not Varney. Dead. I loved, dude, we have to do a Jim Varney movie.
We do.
I love Jim Varney movies.
Ernest Goes to Hell?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Ernest Goes to Jail is awesome. Ernest Goes to Camp is probably my favorite.
That was actually the one that was really worth watching.
It's all worth
all
it.
The rest of them. All the rest of them were kind of made for TV kind of things, or straight to videotape, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's Jim Varney.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I've watched every single one of them.
All right. Well, let's look at how Nesbitt is in a bad way.
Where's Professor Ritchie?
Still missing, sir.
What happened?
We don't know, sir.
We saw the flares and double timed it over to post 18. The whole shore was breaking loose. We grabbed Professor Nesbitt just in time.
We never found Ritchie.
Colonel. We've got to get Nesbitt to a hospital in the States. He's in a bad way.
Right.
Okay. I just like that kind of talk.
He's in a bad way.
He hasn't broken his leg. We don't know what's wrong with him. He's just got it in a bad... It's one of those like family doctors that used to come to Laura Ingalls' house and check on you when you were sick.
Well, dude, I mean, it was like, and he's in a bad way, and it's like, then they show like 6 minutes of him being loaded onto the plane,
right.
And 5 minutes of him flying, you know, in the ambulance, and I was like, oh. Yeah.
That had to be at least, you know, 20 hours of travel time to get him from.
Do you guys remember the scene in the film where the lady's showing the dude?
I like where this is going, no matter what.
Yeah.
She's showing the Christopher Walken German guy the sketches of the big dinosaur shapes, all the different kinds that it might be.
Yeah.
They do like an A-team montage there.
Way more than we needed.
Yeah, and it was like they would have it fade in and fade out and like shuffling through papers and then showing the hands reaching out for more. And all I just wanted to hear, because it was a total montage. It just cracked me up.
The thing about that scene when he's going through all those dinosaur pictures are all from the same basic guy who did all those drawings way back then.
They're all from the same coloring book.
They're all from the same coloring book, except for the actual one that is like, you know, drawn from the storyboard artist, I guess. It's like a totally different style. And he says, oh, this is the one. This is the one. I'm like, yeah, it has to be the one. It's totally different.
Which I think, and I wish I would have gone back to confirm this, but I think the shot that they use for the front of the newspaper – finally show him in the newspaper is the same picture, just a hand-drawn version of the same picture with the jungle motif one that he picks out of a lineup. Monster 3, would you please step forward? And
exactly. That's how it felt.
That's great.
Oh, but I love that. That was going to be one of my opening scenes when I was talking earlier, but that professor was so doubting. He's like, no way am I believing anything you say. You're a nut job. There's no way there could be a dinosaur living during this time. But if you get me a second nub job from Canada and come down and pick out the same picture, sure, I'll believe you. Stick my reputation on it.
Yeah, that's confirmation.
He could have basically went out to the street and found a bum and said, hey, dude, I'll give you $5 to come inside and pick out a picture for me.
Yep.
And told him which one to pick out. You know what I mean?
I totally agree, dude.
Did you guys notice how everybody in the movie is introduced by the titles and their names on their doors?
I did not notice that.
Like the doctor,
I did notice the door shots though, but I never thought about that.
Oh yeah, like every character is introduced by their doors, except for Nesbitt. You see him before, but then you do see his door later on. But like you see the name and then their title underneath it. Even the assistant woman, Miss Lee Hunter, who's very pretty.
Yeah.
If she wasn't wearing that
giant collar,
the clown outfit she's got on.
Glad someone else noticed that, not just me.
Yes, but she's even listed underneath the museum, not museum curator, but scientist guy who's got.
I think that needs to go onto the list.
What? Like characters
introduced by doors, because that's what it did.
I think it would only work for these old 50s movies. They had some weird fetish with that back then.
Yeah.
I love that guy, by the way, the old curator guy. Okay, yeah. Let's take a moment here and talk about our favorite death before I get to the next clip.
Mm.
For me, it's a toss-up between the drunk lighthouse people and the cocky cop
guy, right?
that was eaten. I also like that. I don't think he died, but I like the blind guy that got totally pitched in the dirt. Got kicked to the curb.
Trampled, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard this song the other day in the jukebox. It was about gin and women, and I dumped 5 nickels in the jukebox to hear it again, but the darn thing shut down.
Oh, my gosh.
And the other guy's playing an accordion for some.
Is that the weirdest thing?
He's not even playing. He's like adjusting it, it looks like. He's like, had a tune a little bit.
You know, in a weird way, that those deaths felt right. Something about that felt right. Those guys did not need to be on this earth.
It was finalized too. I mean, in a lot of movies now, if a dinosaur hit, a tower like that, somebody would get out. But you know, there is no opportunity. These guys, they died. I mean, because the dinosaur came through the wall. The bricks went off on top of it.
But coming back around to the blind guy. I mean, he wasn't killed. He wasn't killed by the dinosaur. He was trampled to death by people.
That's true.
That's true. That was the big social commentary of that film.
That's what I felt like this movie had that a lot of monster movies didn't have during that time. Other than, you know, the big one. It's like, oh, we don't want to mess with nuclear weapons because it'll cause this really bad thing. I really felt like this movie had a lot of social commentary from that time beyond just that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Don't mess with nukes.
I agree with that. I mean, it was few and far between, but there were moments like that. Yes, Randy.
I didn't get that. Like, I actually thought to myself, wow, they're kind of celebrating the nuclear bomb, you know, that they showed it. Although they did that thing I hate so much, which I realize is a long standard in filmmaking, but we saw the explosion and heard it simultaneously.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it,
yeah.
that drove me absolutely crazy because I thought this would have been so cool if we would have seen it and then heard it. Like, and well, how, by the way, how were filmmakers, how did it take filmmakers a century to figure that out anyway?
I don't know.
But is it a matter of filmmakers or them not thinking the audiences would understand why you're not hearing the explosion at the same time?
Something's wrong with the sound. Maybe you're knocking on the projector booth.
Probably there's probably a bit of that, I'll bet you, because, you know, they're trying to aim for the lowest common denominator, especially more so back then. You couldn't be independent and edgy and weird. Yeah. You know, you had to be really on the sleeve in front of you. This is what it is. And I think that's probably why. But I think that's even true today. Movies today don't even do the delay.
Yeah, often. It's the same reason that computers back in the 60s and 70s all go boop, 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 boop.
Yeah, yeah. And everything during the 90s sounded like R2-D2.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I was going to make a quick note here about, where did it go? Oh, so can we talk about, okay. So the creature comes, everybody gets sick.
Yeah. And which I thought was brilliant.
Now,
I mean, that
but the
was
way they described it, I thought, oh, yeah, because it got nuked to get it out. So everyone's got radiation sickness. I get it. Yeah. But the doctor starts going, it's disease from the animal. It's from his flesh being so old. They're all breathing in the freaking spores or whatever.
Blood, yeah.
That was dumb.
Thought that was dumb? I thought that was brilliant because, to me,
they're all going to just, while they're walking out, they start going, oh, we're losing our steam here. We're going to lay down and call the colonel and tell him we're not going anymore.
The execution of it may have not been as well as it could have been, but I think the idea, the multi layers of you know, this being, they can't just kill it. That's why it's almost more of a disaster movie than a monster movie. They just can't. It's not it's not impossible to kill it, but they can't now. It's like, okay, now we've done another faction in there that's like, okay, now we have to be careful. If we do kill it, we can't just let its blood go everywhere. So how are we going to kill it? Mm. So I thought it was very good.
Yeah. I my first thought when I saw the blood on the ground was, well, I had two first thoughts. One was, okay, blood drops don't look like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care if they're huge drops of blood, they don't look like that.
Yeah.
In fact, the bigger the drop of blood, the less it looks like a nice uniform blob on the ground.
Hello. Exactly.
Look like okay. Jelly. Great.
Forgetting
it
that,
it probably was.
I was like, touch it. Come on, touch it. Please touch it. Do it. Because that's what people do. People
know
do
you
touch
wanna.
It. You know what? I'm going to tell you something.
That's beast blood.
I'm going to tell you guys something embarrassing that I did, because this shows what a gamer nerd I am. I'm sitting there watching it. They kneel down and look at it. One of them says, it's blood. And I go, I hope this isn't Chris's blood. And my wife was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? She goes, you're talking about, she even knew I meant Resident Evil, and that makes her a nerd, I guess, too. But anyway,
awesome.
Let's play another clip. What kind? Jill, you're the master of unlocking. You better take it with you. Dude, Barry's my favorite guy on Earth. I love Barry. Anyway, yeah. Hey, Capcom, how about a Barry game finally?
Just walk around, you push the A button, it goes, Jill.
Jill? Are you okay?
Walk around like a flashlight like they do in the Luigi's Mansion.
Are you okay, Barry? Oh, you know.
Jill!
Hi, Jill. It's you.
Barry?
I'm really embarrassed to see you now. Just leave me. Go quickly.
It's over, Barry. Wesker's dead.
Is that so?
All right, moving on. What kind of psychiatrist is this guy?
I know my story sounds fantastic, but...
Professor Nesbitt, throughout history, people have claimed that they've seen monsters. Oh, there was the famous Loch Lomond monster, you'll probably recall. Then the green serpents off the shores of Ireland. But as far as I can remember, not one of them was ever caught or even photographed.
Doctor, I'm not inclined to let my imagination run away with me. I'm a scientist.
All right. Then as a scientist, it shouldn't be inconceivable to you... But the mind can withstand just so much pressure. Now, the shock of seeing your friend dead, your own terrifying predicament, was too much to bear, so that you momentarily lost contact with reality.
Oh, eat cheese, you big prick.
I couldn't bear it.
No, but what I'm getting at is, this is a weird presentation of what psychiatry was in people's minds. Mm-hmm. You know,
he was totally dressed to the nines, and he was kind of leaning up against the bed with a little thinking man pose. And
it felt more like a movie where somebody thought they saw something. It's like Dark City or The Matrix, and now there's somebody there to try to explain it away. You didn't see what you thought you saw, Mr. Jones. Now lay down and take it easy and take your pills. It was like a weird, like anti... I'm not saying this was true then, but I don't know what the state of the psychiatry world was in 1953, but it felt like a weird demonization of that profession.
I think it was greatly feared because this was coming off the end of, you know, using like shock therapy. I'm sure it probably went on through the 50s still, but it started coming to the public attention that people were going through shock therapy. And one of the things that struck me was watch it when they had his little check sheet he had. At the top of it, it said psychological interrogation. And I thought interrogation was such a harsh word.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it'd be like more like an evaluation.
That's a weird
like
choice.
We see today. Yeah. So I immediately was like, wow, you know, they're really playing on a fear here that was probably very prevalent in during that time.
Yeah.
And how people viewed psychologists.
Now, y'all remember the really, really old nun that was hanging around the dude with the head injury?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She was wild.
Yeah. So I got a
creepy
clip.
Too. A little bit too nice.
I got a clip from that. It is the angry acting moment of this film.
The angry acting clip of the week.
I try to have that every week. Here's this week's.
Tell him leave me alone. Tell him I saw nothing. Tell him I know nothing. Tell him it's all in my head. It's what everybody says.
Except me, Jacob. Who are you? I saw the beast, too.
Forget my name. I saw the beast, too. Or I can't do a Walken impression. I wish I could. Oh, it's one of my life's great regrets is that I cannot do a Christopher Walken impression.
I don't know nothing. I ain't seen nothing.
That was not Christopher Walken at all.
Whoever farted, I didn't smell nothing.
when are we going to do an entire episode of Film Sack where all four of us do nothing but angry commentary?
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine? How would do that? What would the movie be?
Because you can be angry even when you're happy, you know? Like, I love this movie. I loved it. Oh, it was just, it was so good. And for the time, 53. Oh, so good.
Dude, you're like, you're channeling Carol Channing and
Gilbert Gottfried.
No,
Joan Rivers. can we talk about this movie?
There was a little bit of Sam Kinison in there, too.
Yeah, that's it.
Weird. Okay, another clip. Old man says dumb things. This is the curator guy. I love this guy. He's going down in the diving bell, neener, 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 drinking his tea, hanging out. And this
By
is
the way, I knew not what the crap a diving bell was.
Well, then now you know, dude.
Yeah, until this movie.
And this is it's short. It's very short, but I think some poignant lines were spoken.
This is such a strange feeling. I feel I'm leaving a world of untold tomorrows for a world of countless yesterdays.
What?
I've been waiting to say that my whole life.
I loved his death. They could have really destroyed his character by having him do the typical scream. I think it really added class to his character and the fact that he died looking. It's like all that Ion Flux shows they used to do on MTV where she didn't care if she was going to die. She had to see what was going on. Her curiosity was just that great.
It was kind of a Dr. John Hammond kind of stoic, this is my life. Paleontology is everything to me. And this is the way I should go.
Yeah.
Can't really speak for the guy next to me, but I'm going to go
that
this
dude,
way.
He's screaming like a little girl.
Good stuff. Got one last clip. This is the long reporter thing in the middle of the thing when the creature had hit land and was stalking the city and tearing through town, and they showed a bunch of stock like riot footage or something, to show it. And they had this great. I just love these like, you know, 40s style announcer guys. This goes on for about a minute, but I think it's
everybody had on a hat.
All the time, dude. Hats are great. I want that to come back. Mm-hmm. Like I'm with Caprica, that new show. I want hats back. Like, the future should be hats.
Yeah.
Bring it.
Yeah.
All right, here's the long report.
New York is like a city besieged. A state of emergency has been declared, and the entire police force put on 24-hour duty. Civilian defense is fully mobilized, and shelters have been opened in an effort to stop the mounting hysteria. All traffic has been halted, and Times Square, the heart of New York, has stopped beating. The National Guard has been called out, fully armed, to repel the invader. This is full-scale war against a terrible enemy such as modern man has never before faced. Ordinary bullets have no effect, and a method of destroying the awesome creature has not yet been formulated. But the battlefield has been cleared. Herald Square, 34th Street, Broadway, every section of the city is guarded. No one knows where the monster will strike next. It was last seen on Wall Street, close to where it came ashore. But Lower Manhattan has become no man's land where the beast at present lies hidden. The National Guard is barricading the entire area in an effort to confine the death and destruction of what is already the worst disaster in New York's history.
You wonder
at least
if this
the worst
movie...
one since that giant monkey a year ago.
Do you ever wonder what would happen if the Japanese never had picked up Godzilla from really went forward with Godzilla movie after this? That we would be the stupid, silly people and all the little, make fun of people where they're running down the streets. Because
well, that's a good question. When did the first Godzilla came out? When was that?
It was later than that. This was precursor by far to any Godzilla movie. But yeah, we always think of the Japanese people running down the street. But this had Americans in it.
Oh, you're right. By one year.
We could have been those guys.
By 1 year. 1 year later, 1954, Godzilla. Yeah. Godzilla came out
Godzilla.
From Ishiru Honda before he went on to make millions in the car business.
Yes.
I actually own that on DVD somewhere.
I got to say, I loved the exteriors in New York City 55 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It was so
great to watch.
Yeah, it was neat to see. They would pull back and you could actually see between the buildings because there weren't as many.
Yeah.
I was
reading all the signs going, oh, I wonder if that's still there. What's that? Ooh, what's that?
Yeah. I like that stuff. I like that whole period. That whole time period is to me, it's a little bit magical. It's horribly racist and exclusionary, but very magical time.
I wish we could play DJ with Scott and he could just pull up anything from the movie, because there's a scene where they shoot the hole in the monster with a bazooka.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the monster screams and sounds exactly like a TIE fighter.
Oh, really? Okay, I have to go back and check that out.
It's funny because there were two different types of sounds he made. One was like a lion tiger sound that was kind of a growl. And then there was that pitch sound, like you said. It sounded like a TIE fighter.
Oh, weird. Now that you say that, it kind of rings a bell.
I would love to have that and then the sound from Star Wars, together
side by side, how
close they are.
George Lucas!
You thief!
Stole it again! All right. That was actually our last thing. Let's move on to our list. By the way, my favorite line in the whole movie, Bazooka Men, fire!
Bazooka Men, fire! I love that.
I had that note. I had to make sure to bring that up before I forgot about it. That was a great way to call your dudes with the bazookas. Yeah. Just call them Bazooka Men.
Bazooka Men.
That's what I used to call the little green army men. They had the bazooka. These were the Bazooka Men.
They were Bazooka Men? They were called that?
Do you think one of them was named Joe?
I hope not.
I don't know.
All I did was tell really bad jokes all day. Get him out of the service.
To force feed some kind of public service announcement down my throat? Yeah, sure.
All right. The Film Sack Checklist, of course, is our famous list to us anyway. That tells, try to look for things that are common in all films. Nobody barfed. There were no boobs. It was 1953. In fact, in 53, we wore giant collars to make sure our boobs were not seen.
We couldn't even get close to seeing the boobs. Yeah. There was nothing,
like
nothing to look at.
Lucky if you saw a neck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Stereotypes. The normal sort of monster, good-looking dude out to save the day, chick who's with him the whole time stuff is certainly there. But there are no racial stereotypes in this movie because there are no other races in this movie.
That's true, yeah.
Well, New York is a pretty white community.
Well, at the time, it's hard to say. I don't know enough about it. But I'm guessing it's like, forget the Italian community or Chinatown or 400 other ethnic communities that aren't white as us. We'll just pretend we live in a utopian society where giant lizards attack.
That's right. Only white people go to Coney Island.
That's right.
That's correct, sir.
Let's see. So black guy dies first. You don't even need that on this list. There are no black people. Decapitation, gun, or cop with a gun? Maybe.
Yeah, plenty of cops with guns.
That was my favorite death in the movie.
No, I mean the decapitation, Brian, not are there cops with guns. That's not on our list. We don't have that on the list. Someone peeing? No. Wilhelm scream? Possibly.
Oh, so many opportunities for it.
Yeah,
oh,
I listen
like when
for
he fell
it.
Down that cavern? That would have been, yeah.
The cavern. Oh, you mean the 3-foot step?
The crevice.
Yeah, the crevice.
The ditch.
Yeah. There's a difference between crevice and crevasse for sure here.
You know, it may be that we're actually so early on that Wilhelm scream isn't possible. I mean, it was originated in 51, but you don't really associate it with anything until
it's not that cult.
That film Charge at Feather River, which is 53 like this one.
Yeah. And then Star Wars really rebirthed it. afterbirthed it. bad guy with a theme song or sound? No, but the sketch of the creature, every time it was shown, the music would go.
Yeah, that, and when they all the streets are closed off and they would show the street, boom, another street, boom, boom, and I was like, ooh.
Kenobi type, guy who ran the museum.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Although it's a little bit of a twist, though, because he thought this was all malarkey until he actually got into the diving bell and watched it. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to do that one. Animal or robot as comedy relief? I think the 400-pound walkie-talkies.
Those were great.
Were the comedy
Give
relief.
Give me the walkie-talkie!
They're calling back to town on these things that were seriously big enough to be a scooter or something. They were enormous. Yeah.
There's no walkie with this talkie. This thing is huge.
City talkie?
City talkie, yeah.
Kid named Billy, Bobby, Peter, or Buddy? No, but there was that lady with the collars who was there all over the... Oh, she was constantly there.
Miss Lee Hunter, she's very pretty.
She is very pretty. Not bad.
Tell us how she got introduced when the receptionist comes into Nesbitt's office and says,
"That's right.
There's a woman here to see you, Miss Lee Hunter. She's very pretty."
Very pretty.
Oh, is that how that works now?
Yeah, exactly. It was the strangest line in the film.
It was
like, "Oh, well then send her. I'll send her in."
like we've previously. Case. So all of a sudden, it's an episode of Mad Men. And like, all right, so you're my secretary. When you tell me who's coming in, I want to know whether or not they're attractive. Yeah, right. I don't want to be surprised if they're attractive.
I felt like if somebody would have pushed her off a building, she would have picked up speed and flown away on those.
Oh, yeah. Totally, man. That outfit.
Cave that looks like a vagina. I saw one in the snow portion of things.
Yep. Yeah. So there were several vaginal openings in that early part of the film.
And we didn't see the cave that the actual monster climbed out of, but possibly one too.
A giant vagina.
Birthed from the earth.
That's right.
And apparently 20,000 fathoms
deep.
Deep.
Oh, man, this is an uncomfortable conversation about vagina caves.
Which fathoms are about 6 feet.
Is it?
Not about. Yeah, fathom is 6 feet. So it would have had to have come from 23 miles down, according to the trivia on IMDb, which, the sea is only 7 miles deep at its deepest. So
Why don't they measure me that way? Like I'm a fathom and a few inches.
You're a fathom and a few inches. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Fathom plus.
Fathoms foot.
How tall are you? I'm about a fathom.
Fathom point four or something.
That's a good way to get punched in the face, you know.
I'm about 20 stone.
Indeed.
20 stone. Yeah,
the British way. all right, let's sum it up in a Twitter post. Let's hear from Randy Jordan first. How would you sum up your film experience?
Well, hold on, we got to say our favorite thing in the movie, or did we already do that?
Oh, did we?
We kind of do that the whole show.
Yeah, we kind of. Yeah, I think last time I left it to the end because I was being dumb. But yeah, normally we sort of spread it out.
Well, then if we've already done it, can I just say something that I forgot to mention?
Oh,
please?
Absolutely, dude.
The radio announcer who goes right into the commercial. He's saying, he says he saw a 40-foot monster. He should quit smoking that funny stuff and start smoking Virginia Slims.
Yeah, that was a great. I love that.
I forgot about that. On the TV or the radio or whatever.
They realized that it was silly even then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great. Market, no matter what you do, market, market, market.
Yep.
Randy, let's hear your summation of this film.
I hate to go back to the well, but that looks nothing like Drops of Blood.
It's all right. I think it bears repeating.
Okay.
Because it didn't. It looked like tar painted with a brush. Hey, this film's in black and white. Don't worry about it, Billy.
Yes, right.
Just
black and white. We can win
paint it down. Just put paint there. We don't care. We got to figure out how to do these giant walkie-talkies up the street. Okay, Brian Dunaway, sum it up.
When all else fails, radioactive isotopes. Mm. Cooking monsters from the inside since 1953.
Nice.
That was very good.
I also liked the set piece there with the roller coaster and all that. That was great.
That was good, yeah. Until it shook one time, you're like, oh, yep, that's miniature.
Yeah. Wait, is that really the smartest way to get up there? Hey, let's ride a roller coaster. Let's ride in the roller coaster cars of the roller coaster he's currently ripping down.
Yeah, don't do that. Walk up there is my suggestion. Yeah. And Mr. Brian Ibbett, summate the film the best you can in 140 characters or less.
Let's step right up and watch Harryhausen hit the ground running.
Very nice.
Well, Scott Fletcher has a thing or two to say, specifically this.
I pick my teeth with a grenade rifle.
And that's it. I don't know. I don't remember that line exactly. Do you?
It was
close to, I think he had to do a little bit of, creative license there. I think the line was, hey, have you ever used a grenade rifle before? Yeah, I picked my teeth with them.
Well,
so still, yeah.
Well, I'm going to play it again.
I pick my teeth with a grenade rifle.
All right. Even better the second time.
I like Scott Fletcher's version better.
I do as well. All right, well, here's what you learned while you walked out the room and the movie just kept going because you were trying to stay awake. The 50s were awesome. That's something you learned. Did they just nuke the North Pole? I'm pretty sure that's what they did.
Oh, yeah.
Never trust a doctor that has you laying around in a chair with half your shirt on. let's see. The closer you get to the creature, the quicker you get sick.
Huh?
And lastly, and this bears repeating, Bazooka Men fire! So there you go, folks. That's 20,000 Fathoms. What is it? What's the hell is this movie called? The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Under the Sea.
Under the Sea. Enjoy that.
Under the Sea.
Enjoy that movie. I know I kind of did.
I thought it was groundbreaking.
I was a little bored in some of it because it was so earnest and so serious that I didn't even get much camp out of it. So in a way, that's a compliment because its time, it was a good movie.
It was a good movie.
Blockbuster quality stuff. Yeah, groundbreaking stuff. So I'd recommend seeing it. It's on Netflix streaming, of course. You can rent it in a myriad of places as well. If you guys want to read the show notes for this episode and all our other episodes, go to filmsack.com. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmsack. Jeez. I cannot talk today. It's like there's a midget in my mouth fighting me at every turn. And that makes no sense either. So
no, but it's funny.
It's a brain thing. And what was the last thing I was going to say? Oh, email. Email your film suggestions, your feedback, and otherwise to filmsack@gmail.com. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Randy, for Brian, and for the cast and crew of The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms Below the Sea, or however the hell it's called.
has nothing to do with below. That was later on.
We will see you next week for what's our movie? Oh, crap. I got to find that.
No? Dun, dun, oh, crap.
Dun. Hold on. Let me pull it up.
Dream a Little Dream, possibly?
Edit this out. Yeah, I think God. So. Is it Dream a Little Dream? I think
the
it is.
The Corys.
Yeah, but for once, it's the Ugly Cory.
Where's the Mega Man?
No, it's
which one is,
it's Dream a Little Dream.
Yep,
Dream. Our next movie for Film Sack will be Dream a Little Dream with the two
Corys.
I can't wait. And in this one, the Ugly Cory is the main character.
He is indeed.
Which is a rare thing for the Corys. Mm. So good for him and his terrible Michael Jackson ripoff. Performance. So we'll look forward to that. We'll see all you guys next week for that. And until then, enjoy yourselves. We'll see you on episode 20.
Ba-ba-bum.
For 20,000 years, this monster lived under the Earth's core. And then when it died of dysentery, it gave me a watch.
Oh, that was horrible.
It was not horrible. It was brilliant.
Died of dysentery. Awesome. I love that.
That's maybe my favorite thing I've ever heard.
Thank you.
I love
that. He was damned if this German scientist was going to get his hands on it.
Eugene Lone, or Eugene Lorre.
Yeah.
Was the director, and he was mainly noted later in his life. I can't talk.